Airtime podcast brought to you by the Shields Gazette. I'm Dominic Skerr, joined as ever by Miles Starforth and Joe Buck to discuss just another positive couple of weeks at Newcastle United. Feels every time on the Mouth of the Time podcast is just positivity. And I know things can obviously turn around quickly in football. We all know that, especially being a Newcastle fan. But reporting on the club at the moment, Miles, Joe, it's almost as uplifting as you can remember it, really.
Yeah, you think back 2-3 months ago, you just didn't know where the next win was coming from. Now 7 games unbeaten, and the team's going into every game. And I think, I'm sure, fans are looking at every game thinking this is a winnable game. And long may that continue. It's all very positive on and off the pitch.
Yeah, and Joe, how are you feeling about everything at the moment? I mean, we've always kept positive when we've been doing the Mouth of the Time podcast, particularly through the January transfer window. But now, while Newcastle produced the goods in January with signing players, now they're producing the goods on the pitch as well.
Yeah, who knew supporting a football club could be so fun? You know, it's been great the last... To be honest, it's been great since Eddie Howe took charge, but especially since January, it's been really good. And they don't look... I know, obviously, speaking too quick, but they don't look like losing games. They look like... They're just really good. I just love following them, love supporting them a minute. It's just a really good place to be.
Yeah, really, really, really impressive turnaround from Eddie Howe and his players, up to 14th in the Premier League table. But ahead of the Brentford game, there was an interview with the co-owners, Amanda Staveley and Mehrdad Gudusi, in The Athletic, which discussed various topics, a managerial appointment, getting Eddie Howe in, plans moving forward. But a big one being the stadium, St James's Park, the expansion. Mehrdad Gudusi said Newcastle definitely looking to expand it, working with the city and the council to see what they can do. A lot of things need to happen first, but that's the way forward. And if we can get it to 60 or 65,000, amazing, and we'll look at every possibility. Crucially, there's no plans to move away from St James's Park, which was a bit of a contentious subject when takeover first happened. Everyone knows the limitations of Leeds Terrace, things like that. But Miles, what have you made of these comments and the potential plans for St James's Park?
Well, it was refreshing, really, just to even hear it being discussed, because it just simply wasn't on the agenda before this takeover. I remember, a month or two before the sale to Mike Ashley, there was a proposal, under Freddie Shepherd's kind of during his time in charge, to increase it to 60,000. And I think we're all very excited about that. It was said at the time, logistically, it's difficult, it's expensive. And this involved essentially extending the Gallagher end of the ground above the metro station. And obviously the big development in the Mike Ashley area in terms of that is the sale of the land at Strawberry Place. Works, possibly importantly, hasn't started there yet, but we all feared when that was given approval by the City Council's planners that that would essentially end any hope of expansion of St James's Park. I would imagine all the kind of key players are in discussions about this and what is possible. So we can only hope for expansion. Of course, it is difficult that the East Stand can't be extended any further back, really, because of Leeds Terrace. You've got these logistical problems in terms of the land behind the Gallagher end. The other two sides can't really be extended any further. But the willingness just to look into this is significant. It's refreshing. We've all seen St James's Park sold out when the team's not been doing well. We've had nothing but more or less relegation battles for a long time. Yet we've had 50,000 plus at St James's most games. Just how big could it be? Well, the capacity would be limited, but just to see it get to 60,000 or even more would be fantastic for the club in the longer term.
And Joe, St James's Park, it's been the home of Newcastle United since it was founded, really, and no Newcastle fan has known anything other than St James's Park, which is a rarity, I guess, in the modern day game. How important is it to hear that owners come out and say, we're not going anywhere, we want to expand St James's Park and we're staying put?
Absolutely massive. I think that was the main thing that fans want to see. They want to hear from the owners that they're going to stay at St James's Park. You're right, there's not going to be a relocation, because everyone knows Newcastle is the city, you know, it's a city centre ground. It's right in the middle. It's perfect, perfect position for everything, really. So I agree, if they can exhaust any option to get it extended on the land it currently is, I think that should be absolutely something they have a look in. And one thing I sort of would like to see is safe standing. Now, I was at West Ham in the away end a couple of weeks ago, and they have sort of the barriers up there, which would sort of be safe standing. And that was really good. It was a good experience to watch it. So I think that would be something that I would look at. If you, well, obviously you can extend the capacity, but if they're going to do something at St. James's, I would definitely be looking at safe standing somewhere.
Yeah, that's certainly something to consider moving forward. But back to on the pitch matters, Newcastle now 4 points clear of the relegation zone. Like I said before, 14th in the table, the highest they've been all season. With the 2-0 win at Brentford, making it 4 wins out of the last 5, 7 unbeaten. Goals from Joe Linton and Joe Willock. Miles, you were at the game. What were your thoughts on that win?
Well, it just felt like a big opportunity before the game, given the respective positions, and then following the dismissal, that you know, it just felt like a bigger opportunity and one that the team had to grasp, and they did. The sending off, kind of, Eddie Howe made the point after the game. It doesn't always make the job easier, you know, as we saw in the Norwich game at St James's Park, you know, late last year. But this time they did really make it a lot easier. I think the interesting thing, I think we're going to get into Ryan Fraser and his performance, but what they did is Brentford went quite narrow, even narrower following that dismissal, and they got the ball wide and they delivered balls in the box. And I think, you know, we were sat in there, and I think I turned to you, Dom, and said this could be, you know, really an opportunity for Chris Wood to get his first goal, given the quality of the deliveries. As it was, it was a header from a wide ball from a wide area that got them the deadlock, but it was Gillinton got on the end of it. That could have easily been Chris Wood, because the quality of those deliveries that were coming in, actually from both sides, to be honest, was very good. And once they went in front, you never really felt they were in any kind of threat, really. Brentford had a spell after Christian Eriksen came on, and that was when we saw Guimaraes come on, and he really got a grip of the midfield after that little spell of Brentford pressure, and that bodes well as well.
Yeah, he really sort of just took the sting out of the game from Brentford's perspective. Bruno coming on and just passed the ball, like, I think there was a stat that I put out there where it was he'd had more passes and touches than all but two of Brentford's outfield players, which, okay, man advantage, but shows how quickly he wanted to get involved. And it's hard to get in that Newcastle midfield at the moment, with the likes of Joe Linton, Joe Willock and Jonjo Shelvey playing so well at the moment. But key thing for Newcastle is they're impressing without the key players, the likes of Kieran Trippier, Alan Saint-Maximin, Callum Wilson, all out, two of the top scorers. And Saint-Maximin, injury, missed the last two games. Eddie Howe says cough issue. He's been in France and Monaco over the past week. I pose this to both you guys. What have you made of the Alan Saint-Maximin injury situation as such? There's been quite a lot of speculation around that, but what have you guys made of it?
I think we'll have to take what Eddie Howe said at face value. We've week in, week out, we see Saint-Maximin getting kicked. He's said he's had the kick on the calf. Obviously a little sore. He's been away in Monaco for what Howe said was intensive treatment. I think the only question mark we've all got is why he went to France for treatment. Why isn't that treatment available in this country, in the northeast? But if he was going to be out for a couple of weeks, and it was that take that time to heal and going back to France for a couple of weeks for the treatment suited, and then fine. Another thing Eddie Howe said was that he's got a relationship with a physio out there, and as we know, these relationships are important. So he's been away, he's got his treatment, he's back now, and let's hope he's refreshed. But the thing for me is he's come back and he can't expect, as you've just touched on, can't expect to walk into the team. He may have to be settled for place on the bench. Howe said all along, he's reluctant to change a winning team. If the team's doing well, those players deserve another chance. So that's interesting to see what he does with the Brighton game.
Yeah, Joe, what have you made of that? Sorry.
It's a nice situation to be in, as you say, if he's coming back potentially fit for Brighton. But as you said, we've won the last game. We're on a decent run of form. Murphy and Fraser have done nothing to suggest that they should be dropped. And with three games, obviously played Saturday, Thursday, Sunday. There's going to be a lot of games, so rest St. Maximin if you can, because he is a key player. I know that we've done well without him, but there's going to be a game where we need a bit of spark, a bit of creativity from somewhere, and he'll probably provide it. I'm in total agreement. I wouldn't be rushing him back in, but again, if he is fit, you know, what do you do? It is a difficult situation for Eddie Howe to pick, but that's a good thing for Eddie Howe because he's not had selection dilemmas like this much. So it's nice for a manager to have them sort of dilemmas.
Yeah, and Ryan Fraser, I think for me, you guys might disagree. I thought that was his best performance in a Newcastle shirt at Brentford. I thought he was direct every time he got the ball, brought it forward, attacked. Great assist. Like Miles said, the constant quality from the left-hand side, even crossing with his right foot, left foot, deliveries into the box. It was like the energy of St. Maximin without any of the fluff or the trickery, just pure energy, pure delivery, and probably only lacking a goal from a perfect 10 out of 10 performance from him. He obviously playing in his preferred position on the left wing, somewhere where Alan St. Maximin prefers to play. So, like you say, do you see him, Alan St. Maximin, staying on the bench for, or staying out the side, being on the bench for Brighton?
Well, you would think, given everything that Eddie Howe said in terms of how he views his selection, that we'll see Fraser and Murphy start the game. And Joe's right. You look at the games coming up. There's going to be opportunities. There's going to be a need to kind of rotate players to an extent. There'll be injuries and what have you. So everyone's going to be needed over the coming weeks. This is a tough month. I know the Palace game's now been postponed. It was interesting, Eddie Howe actually switched Fraser to the left, thinking that Brentford were going to have their usual back five. They had a back four, and that suited him even more. Mm. But yeah, very, very good performance. It's great to see because, we've talked about this before. The big worry about him before when he joined was the fact he hadn't kicked a ball for 6 months. That was a problem last season, but now he's fit and he's staying fit and he's making a big contribution on the pitch.
Yeah, and Joe, before this podcast started, you said you could spend the entire podcast speaking about one player, and that's Joe Linton. Obviously got his second goal of the season on Saturday. It's just been a revelation under Eddie Howe playing in that centre midfield role. So, Joe, here's your platform. Joe Linton, discuss.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? The transformation. He's pretty much the complete centre midfielder, and nothing else you can say. He breaks up play. He can drive with the ball. He's involved in attack and defence, and he fights for everything. And it's a complete world away from, this time last year, this time 6 months ago. And it's unbelievable. I can't think of a bigger transformation, not just in Newcastle, but pretty much any player, to go from a striker to move into centre midfield and to be as impressive as he is. I think Miguel Antonio, I believe, his podcast said that he was shocked how good Joe Linton was, and that he never give the West Ham players a kick, and that just shows that he's now getting the opposite attention from the opposition. It's unbelievable, and to see him get a goal as well was the perfect icing on the cake, and to see him run then 80 meters to celebrate in front of the fans who I believe sang his chant for the next 15-20 minutes, whatever it was. It was just a good afternoon, and it was nice to see him grab that goal.
Yeah, and Miles, you've covered the club for 20-odd years. Can you remember such a transformation from an individual player who's gone from zero to hero, if you like, in such a short period?
Yeah, certainly not off the top of my head. I think the issue was with Joe Linton was he was many things, and you could, he's had ability, but one thing he wasn't was an out-and-out centre-forward. He wasn't a £40 million number nine, which is what he arrived as. Bruce would talk about him being on the left where else we could see him on the pitch. He had a decent game in his time as a number 10, but he wasn't a number 9, certainly not a £40 million one, and that kind of hung around his neck. So what's helped is now he's no longer got that number nine in his back, and there's a recognition that that isn't who he is. Having said that, the one thing that was missing from his game as a midfielder was goals. So that's why I think it was important for him to get that goal, for him as much as anything else, against Brentford. You add goals to what he's been doing over the past few weeks, and you really have got an incredible midfield player. And again, long may it continue.
Yeah, and now the win on Saturday leaves the bottom sort of half of the table looking a lot different now. Newcastle obviously up to 14th on 25 points. Then you got Brentford 24, Leeds 23, Everton 22, and then the bottom three, Burnley on 21 after being beaten by Leicester last night, Watford on 19, and Norwich on 17. There's going to be a lot of twists and turns between now and the end of the season, but if you were to look at the table now, which three teams can you see going down? Newcastle, obviously not safe yet, but which three teams do you see going down as it stands?
You would certainly wouldn't be surprised if it's the three that are there at the minute. I wouldn't want to guess too much, but you know, a few weeks ago, again, just a few weeks ago, we were talking about being three from four teams. Now it's three from seven, but you know, you certainly, those three at the bottom have got a job in their hands to get out of there in terms of their own form and everything else going on at the clubs. Because as we know at this club, when you're in a rut, when you haven't got any momentum, when you haven't got confidence, there's not a buzz around your club, around the team. It's so hard to change that. It's, you know, you turn around an oil tanker. Fortunately, like it looks like this club's more than made that turn. But it's hard to see those teams pulling away from trouble.
Joe?
Yeah, I think Watford and Norwich, for me, Watford and Norwich, I think, might go down. I think the other team potentially is Brentford. You know, that was a massive game for them on Saturday, and how good our win was amplified by how big of a defeat that is for them. And, you know, they seem to be heading not down, but they seem to be on a downward spiral. And someone like Burnley, I know they got beat last night, but they've just got that knack of knowing how to stay up and knowing how to get results. So I think it'll be Brentford that replace Burnley, but other than that, I think that's how it'll
be. Yeah, the only thing going in Brentford's favour is potentially Eriksen. We saw a few little glimpses of him when he came on about possibly the contribution he could make. He could really lift them at a good time. But yeah, you if you're a Brentford fan, you'd be concerned at the slide they're on.
Yeah, and crucially, like Miles said before, Newcastle's recent run of form and Burnley picking up a couple wins too has sort of dragged three more teams into it in Everton, Leeds and Brentford. And if you're looking at the bottom seven now, five of them have actually changed the managers during the season. Only Brentford with Thomas Frank and Sean Dyche at Burnley are the only two who've kept the job throughout the season so far. And Leeds replaced the manager, Marcelo Bielsa, getting sacked following a poor run of form. Jesse Marsh coming in there. What did you guys make of Bielsa leaving the club? Did it have to happen given Leeds' form?
I think it probably did. I think we're all kind of admirers of Bielsa and what he's done at Leeds. But it's hard to see them or him surviving those two, their last two results. We all felt for him, given what he's done for that club and the journey he's been on. It was hard for any manager to survive those the kind of run that they've been on, and that, particularly those last two results.
Yeah, it felt a really sad ending, didn't it? It just sort of fizzled out for him. There was no, like, I don't know, there was just nothing. It just sort of fizzled out. But I think Leeds have got enough in their squad, and the sort of spirit that Bielsa has done over the last, you know, few years, I think there's enough in that squad to keep them up.
Yeah, you think with the likes of Calvin Phillips, Patrick Bamford coming back in, there'll be enough there. England internationals ultimately could see them out of trouble, but 60 goals conceded this season. I mean, 20 in the last five, just woeful at the back at the moment. So with a new manager in, if he fails to hit the ground running, for me, I'd say they could be the third team. But like you said, Brentford are an interesting one, on a downward spiral at the moment. Their next two games against Norwich and Burnley, I think, if they fail to beat either of them, I'd probably have them down as the third team to go down, along with Norwich and Watford. But like you say, plenty of twists and turns between now and the end of the season, that's for sure. And Newcastle's record in February is 3 wins and a draw. Only Liverpool have a better record in the Premier League. Is Eddie Howe a realistic bet for manager of the month, would you say?
Surely the only bet, really. Or surely the only option, given what he's done at the club in terms of the team and the performances and results of the past month. Yeah, he's for me, he'd be nailed on for it.
Yeah. And coming up now, you hope it won't be a manager of the month curse should Eddie Howe get it. It's quite a tricky fixture schedule. Brighton at the weekend, team they've never beaten in the Premier League, then 3 away trips in 7 days to Southampton, Chelsea and Everton. Fortunately, Crystal Palace progressing in the FA Cup means that that game will now be rescheduled, set to take place at St James's Park. And Newcastle, like we're saying, not out of the woods yet by any means, only 4 points above the relegation zone. But this run of fixtures could be really crucial given the number of away games in quick succession after Brighton.
Yeah, it's a tough run, but that Palace game, the postponement of that game gives them a little breather. But as I said, they go into this run of games thinking they can win games, they can pick up points. These are very winnable games, and I think when you're playing the way they are, they'll be relishing this run of games, especially knowing they've got that little breather. They'll give it all, and there's players to come into the team like Guimaraes. Have we touched on Sam Maximum? There's a few options there, even though we know Trippier's out and Wilson are out.
Yeah, and Joe, this 7 days you're playing 3 away games. Do you think that presents an ideal opportunity for someone like Bruno Guimaraes to come into the side, given his lack of starts so far?
Absolutely. As you said, the three in midfield right now are probably undroppable in this current form. But them 3 games in 7 days means that Eddie Howe will probably have to rotate, which means that he sort of drop one of the midfielders without disrupting, the harmony, whatever, because you can say, look, I'm just rotating the squad. And that gives Guimaraes an ideal opportunity to come in and impress because, as you have said, we've only seen him in fleeting appearances, but what he's done so far, it's looked really good. So I'm excited to see him, as everyone else is excited to see him. And especially against teams, maybe the Chelsea game will be difficult, but Brighton, Everton and Southampton, they'll probably fancy their chances in them games. And why not give Guimaraes a chance?
And what are your thoughts going into Brighton on Saturday? Like you say, a team they've never beaten in the Premier League, but the confidence is high at the moment following seven games without defeat.
Yeah, there's been some also awful games, if I'm honest, against Brighton, since the two clubs got promoted. Notably that one away last season, that defeat which we all thought would lead to the dismissal of Steve Bruce. It didn't. The team recovered. Brighton are, a very well coached team. They're, you'd probably say, a progressive team, the way they play. Newcastle have struggled against that. They haven't, but now they've got a way of playing. Everyone knows their jobs. You would think that the two teams are much better matched.
Yeah, and Joe, we're getting to the stage now where every game Newcastle play, we're looking forward to, whereas previously, even earlier in the season, it was almost like a chore going to watch Newcastle. So how are you feeling going into this one?
Absolutely. It's so nice to be able to look at the game of the weekend and be excited to go, build your whole week around that on Newcastle playing the weekend. And yeah, it should be a good atmosphere. War flags are going to be in the East Stand for a change. So that'll be something a bit different for the game. And it's just a nice feeling around the club. And even if it doesn't necessarily go our way, touch what it does. But if it doesn't, you still know that the 11 on the pitch are going to be giving it their all, and they're fighting for you and that the fans will back them. It's just a really good place to be. And I'm so excited to be going at the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, and a good omen going into the game. Brighton have lost 4 of the last 5 since selling Dan Byrne to Newcastle. Meanwhile, Newcastle have won 3 of the last 4 since Byrne arrived, with 2 clean sheets in that time. And like you say, the best defence in the Premier League in 2022. Just to both of you, what have you made of Dan Byrne's impact so far, and how important a signing has he been?
He's been terrific so far. He's hardly put a foot wrong. He's won almost everything. His decision making, his you know, the challenges he's made. There's not, he's hardly put a foot wrong. It's been great to see the impact he has made at the club. He was a player, you know, over the few years, I read a bit about his story, being let go by the club at a young age, the journey he's had to go on. You know, read interviews with him when he's talked about his, you know, being a fan, a Newcastle fan, who's had to go away from the club to make a career in the game. And I always felt, always hoped there'd be a place for him at the club at some point. And so it came to pass. And he's came here and he's been given this opportunity and he's taken with both hands. He's been terrific alongside Cher. And they're both keeping Lascelles out of the team, who's the club captain. So long may that continue. And of course, this game will have a big significance for Burn, given that Brighton, the other team that gave him that opportunity in the Premier League. But he's absolutely a Premier League player. He's been fantastic so far.
Yeah. Joe, you look at that defensive line Newcastle have now. It's chalk and cheese to what we saw at the start of the season. You just Matt Target, Dan Burn, Fabian Cher, and okay, Emil Kraft at the moment, but with a fully fit Kieran Trippier back in. That's starting to look like a real Premier League quality defence, whereas earlier in the season, people would have said, oh, Newcastle have very much a Championship defence.
Yeah, definitely. It's been, like everything, it's been such a transformation. And I know, especially someone like Fabian Cher, there was a lot of complaints that he couldn't play in a back four. I know that was one of the big criticisms that he had playing a back five. And he's shown that alongside Byrne, you know, he's solid in there. And I think one thing to think about is Dubravka has had barely anything to do over the last few weeks. I know he conceded against West Ham, but I can't remember him making too many saves. So for us to be seeing Martin Dubravka is not doing anything, I mean, when was the last time you could see that in his whole?
Well, you think back to some games in you know, the past couple of years where how busy the goalkeepers have been for this club. And you're right, it's a good point. Dubravka hasn't had a great deal to do. Obviously, you know, we know that can change. They've got Chelsea coming up. That's the toughest of this coming run. But he's been very well protected. And that's not just the back four, that's the players in front of them. You've seen the midfield work incredibly hard to protect that back four when they haven't. The front players are pressing the ball well. And it really has been a team effort.
Yeah, and we're going to have a step back to normality in a COVID sense this week. Eddie Howe will be doing his first pre-match press conference for Newcastle United in person this week. It's all been on Zoom since Howe arrived. And Miles, granted, it's a small thing in the grand scheme of things, but certainly from our point of view, as reporters, it's a welcome one.
Yeah, it's normality, or, you know, pretty much as close to normality as we can get. I'm looking forward to it. We've been on Zoom for 2 years now. There's been occasional, you know, unveilings and press conferences, which have been in person, but for the most part, for 99% of them, have been on Zoom. That doesn't, you know, reporters haven't had to leave the house to do their jobs, but they haven't been able to do their jobs quite as well as a result of that. So it's a big step forward. It'd be good for Howe to get to know the journalists that cover this club a little bit better, and vice versa. It should help everyone, really. I don't think it really helped Steve Bruce that everything was over Zoom. Things festered, and the press conferences became more kind of confrontational than convivial. Things weren't addressed off the record, in terms of off the record or after the press conferences, which is, as you know, as journalists, is important often as what's said on the record. We had these kind of clipped answers over video calls. It didn't help him. It didn't necessarily help anyone, to be honest. It didn't help the club. So this is a welcome step towards certain normality, and it'll be interesting to see how everything goes.
Yeah, and we'll have all the coverage of Eddie Howe's press conference on Friday morning over on the Shields Gazette, where you can follow all of the latest Newcastle United news and stories from Miles, Joe or myself. And you can follow us all on Twitter as well for all your latest Newcastle United news and information. You can also subscribe to the Shields Gazette for unlimited ad-like access to all of our Newcastle United coverage. Just head over to shieldsgazette.com/subscriptions for more information on that. But we'll wrap it up there. Slightly longer show than planned. But for now, Miles, Joe, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you. everyone for listening, and we'll hope you can all join us next time on the Mouth of the Time podcast.